Hello, everyone. This is Vishal Krishna, the founder and editor of the upstreamlife.com. We're all going to be voting next week, and India is coming up to a general election, and we will decide who's the prime minister and who's not going to be the prime minister. That's the interesting thing. But okay, what is this podcast all about? Pawan and I have been doing these videos. We've done something on the budget. We're going to do this regularly on what built India. We're going to talk with data. Data does not lie. Data does not contradict. And so we've curated a nice podcast around data. We're also going to put out this data that we've curated as a separate slide, which you can access on the website. So go vote wisely. And I have with me Pawan Sharma, the founder, the co-founder or the partner at BCL India. BCL India is also a firm that advises me and, you know, they help startups. I'll put it that way. But Pawan, what's the podcast about today?
It's about a lot of data, how India's progressed over the last 10 years. We are looking at multiple data points. We are looking at what are the challenges that we could see. And like you rightly said, we need to vote wisely. So hopefully this helps.
And by the way, in this topic, we cover about climate change. India's climate change is real. The center versus tax versus state tax debate is real.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot more in between. We talk about wealth education, and everything. Education, wealth.
A lot of things. Yeah.
And how we've done well with all those constraints.
I hope you all like it.
You will like it, guys. So thank you. Enjoy it. Pawan, how are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Pawan, thank you so much. This is our second time together in this humble studio of ours. And we have to do more because we are data-led at BCL.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that Pawan's been my mentor for a long time and he advises my company. But he's also a man of data and he will tell you how political economy works in this country. So we are going to talk about taxes now and we are also going to talk about income and wealth inequalities in India and the challenges to the India growth story and the positive aspects of the India growth story. I want to start with this. When I look at the TV, or I seldom watch TV, but when I switch it on, it's always about a state asking the center to release their tax money, right? And that's, let's put the first segment as tax sharing between center and states. And on that note, I want to say there's a certain opposition party. As I walk through the streets of Bangalore, they're giving out pamphlets saying, you know, Karnataka has paid the highest amount of GST and we have not got that money back. That is it true?
It is to some extent.
Okay.
So maybe we should understand how tax revenue shared between center and states. That will give some background.
And regardless of the party in power in the center, this is always the problem,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
The center does not compensate the states. And regardless of the party in power,
It's not about the party. Let us look at the mechanics. How is money shared between the center and states?
Okay.
And what are the levers that center can pull, right?
Okay.
So if you look at the way money is shared between center and states, the formula is set by the Finance Commission.
All right.
So the 15th Finance Commission is what we are referring to for this year. The period mostly is 2020 to 2025.
So
that is a period of, and the Finance Commission has a recommendation.
Okay.
So the recommendation states what is the amount of money in as far as the central government's tax share is concerned. And when I say tax share of the central government, I'm referring to income tax, which goes straight to the center. CGST, that's the central government's share of GST, because SGST and SGST's share in IGST goes straight to the state. So we're looking at taxes that are collected by the center. How is that money shared with the states? So one, the first point being that there is a cap of 41%, which means 41% of the total tax that is collected by the center has to be shared with the states. Now the question is, how do they share the money with individual states? And that is where the Finance Commission's recommendation comes into play.
All right.
So the Finance Commission has a formula. They have different weightages that are given to how a state is performing. What is its income distance is the one that has
the criteria is income distance, population, area,
ecology,
tax effort, demographic income, performance.
Income distance being the one that has the highest weightage. Income distance is the difference between the average per capita income and the state's per capita income.
Okay.
So if a state's per capita is much lower than the average, the Finance Commission naturally believes to bring everybody to the same plane, you need to, you know, give them more money.
Yes.
And the principles have always been equality, right? Or I'd say equanimity, right? People should get enough money so that their income levels can increase, so that their lifestyle can get better.
Now I get the point now. Therefore, Karnataka is not getting much because probably the center believes that our income
distance is less.
Yeah.
Right? So if you look at the states, southern states, not just Karnataka, we look at Karnataka, Kerala, Andhra, Telangana, and Tamil Nadu especially. If you look at these states, the share that they get from the center's kitty is much lower compared to what they contribute.
Okay.
Right. So first is the Finance Commission's recommendation. 41% of the total collection goes to states. And each state would get based on their respective performance. And now if you look at what money the state is getting, if you look at Kerala, I'll keep looking at this data.
Please do.
Point,
we should look at data
a lot
point because there's too much data.
So
believe me, when you're running a country like India, you have to look at data. You have to look at
so it. If you look at the state like Kerala, it gets back 60 paisa for every rupee that is contributed by its people. If you look at Karnataka, it gets 17 paisa back.
So, okay. Here's
for
the,
every rupee it contributes.
Here's the difference. Kerala gets 0.60 paisa for every rupee contributed.
Correct.
We get only 0.17 or 17 paisa.
Maharashtra gets 8 paisa.
When I say we, it's Karnataka. We are domiciled in Karnataka and Bangalore.
So
Maharashtra gets only
0.08 for every rupee that it contributes. Right?
0.08. Why is that?
That is how the Finance Commission's recommendation on the formula works out, right? And this is not just the trouble. The other trouble is also if you compare the recommendations for 15th Finance Commission, 10th Finance Commission, southern states have seen a drop in their share just based on the formula.
Right.
So one is how much money comes from the center to the state, there's a drop. If you compare the money you're getting with your contribution to the center, again, there is a disparity. See, because money to the central government will have to come from taxes. That's taxes are paid by people. And people don't fall from sky, right? They're part of a state.
Correct. Right?
So if you look at a state, the state is saying, my people are contributing X, I'm getting a very small fraction of it, and I need more. Only then could I deploy more, right? So it is not an unfair ask.
Okay.
I'll add two more points to it.
Yes.
It's like these gray clouds on the conversation, right? Two more points. One, cess and surcharge, they are components of taxes collected by the center, which is not shared with the state. Only the base tax, that is either the base income tax or base GST, is collected and shared.
Like the corporate tax is 22%.
Income tax 22%, and then you have surcharge and cess. 22% is shared, surcharge and cess is not shared. They're not required to share.
Okay.
Again, not the party that is in power currently, any party for that matter. You're not required to share cess and surcharge. The amount
the
that has
been
collected over the last 5 years, surcharge and cess is close to 37 lakh crore. If you see that number, it's a substantial sum. Second thing is that the share of cess and surcharge is also increasing in the total tax kitty. So it's close to 20% now. Some reports say it's more than 20%. So if you're looking at the total tax collection, 20% of it goes straight to the center. And the center then can devise any scheme that it wants. It is free to do that without the need to send that money back to states. The last point being, even the money that the states have had to get, they've had to basically, you know, beg for it. And in the last 5 years, 3.7 lakh crore has still come to the states. It is still pending with the central government. So even what you have to get, you're not getting.
Okay. Narrative-wise, for the people to understand, is it right for the opposition to say that the money should come? Or is it... because I see the narrative being used saying that, okay, the party, the central government is being kind to its own party who has power in states, rather,
I
right?
I will not buy that.
Would that be the argument?
No, it is not true because if you look at states like, let's take Rajasthan, or if you take even states like Gujarat, if you take Maharashtra, let's say Gujarat, Rajasthan, they have also not benefited. They have also been at the wrong end of the stick. No, they have not received the funds that they need to get. But the other challenge being, if you see the disparity, right? If you look at the maybe a chart you need to put up, you know,
yes,
so that people,
I'm going to
your
put this
viewers
chart
can see, right? So if you look at the bottom end of the graph, in addition to the southern states, you also have Gujarat.
Yeah.
For every rupee it contributes, it gets only 26 paisa back. Correct?
That's interesting. So we have to look at the data, ladies and gentlemen. Pawan is absolutely right. Instead of saying, yes, this party is not in power in the state and therefore the center is giving us a stepmotherly treatment, is actually not true when you look at the data.
Not true. Yeah.
Because in the past, you had the same government in power and the same government power in the state, center and state, but money has not come to the state.
The challenge, of course, here that we have to see is, you know, irrespective of the party, maybe something needs to be done about the formula. So if you look at a state like Bihar, so every rupee it contributes, it's getting 7 rupee back.
Bihar is getting 7 rupees.
If you look at Uttar Pradesh.
7 rupees. That's 7.
That means 7 times.
7 times
of what you're
regardless of your contribution.
What
that means other states are subsidizing.
Exactly. If you look at Uttar Pradesh, it's getting, I think, 2.5. So every rupee contributes. This time's budget, the amount of money that Gujarat has got is higher than all these states, southern states combined.
Mm.
So naturally, you know, there would be an issue raised out of this, right? But maybe something has to be done about the formula, irrespective of who is in power, right? Can you cap the share? Can you say that as the state's share should not go beyond 5, beyond 6? Or can you say X amount of all tax share has to be distributed equally, and anything in excess will be shared based on a formula?
Okay, this is what I want to ask you. I'm going to put out these slides, ladies and gentlemen, the 15th Finance Commission's recommendations. You will see how much the states need to be paid. You will also see tax contribution versus tax devolution. You will also see tax contribution versus tax devolution in terms of how much rupee each state gets back for every rupee, how much paisa it gets back. You will see that. So, but I want to ask you, when you say Tamil Nadu and Kerala have seen the steepest decline in share in divisible pool, explain that, because that is going to be the second graph that they're going to be seeing.
Right. Now, that is compared to the 10th Finance Commission. Okay. If you compare the 10th Finance Commission with the 15th Finance Commission, a lot of time has passed between these two finance commissions. But based on the formula itself, you would see that Tamil Nadu and Kerala, their share, based on the formula, has dropped. Now that is one. The second, of course, is how much are you contributing versus how much you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Third is your share in the surcharge and cess. And the fourth point being is that even based on this formula, what all money I had to get, I shouldn't have to ask for it multiple times. It, it should flow to me.
Absolutely.
That's a third question,
yes.
Right? Maybe one of the point that we need to bring up here is also the HDI, right? Which is important. And that is the argument that some of these states are putting forth.
Before we move to HDI, because you've designed this interview beautifully, because at the center and the state, you know, the fight that they're having for generations now, it goes back to ancient times also. If you read that book, you know, Lords of the Deccans or whatever, or the Deccan Sultans or whatever, it shows that Indian emperors were always biased towards the northern emperors in terms of storytelling. It's very interesting. So therefore, the states in the south don't like, or other states don't like, everything going to Delhi. It's interesting, right? So I want to talk about, so the tax versus the state is always the center, and the central taxes, state taxes, and the fight between the center and the state is real, but it's been happening for generations, regardless of the party. And at the center of all this is the Human Development Index, which states like Karnataka want addressed, right, at this point
so
of
if
time.
You look at the...
And this is possible only if they get that money back.
No, what they're saying is that you look at the way my state is performing, and let us take HDI as one of the metrics. If you take the state of Kerala, doing exceptionally well when it comes to HDI. HDI is a composite index. Looks at healthcare, education, and per capita income, right? So if you look at the southern states, they're doing very well. If you look at some of the northern states, they're not doing so well.
Okay.
Now the question is the gap increasing or is the gap narrowing? If the gap is increasing, then no matter how much money you give to the state, it will not yield any results. So should you peg the contribution to the state to an HDI index?
Absolutely, right? Let's take this example. Kerala, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, Karnataka do reasonably well in the HDI, Human Development Index.
Yes.
If you look at even America, the schools are compensated based on performance. Schooling system. So don't you think if each state and their municipalities and districts are contributing to the HDI and that's improving, don't you think they need more money?
No, ideally, that's how the that's
correct.
How maybe the formula could be. The 16th Finance Commission has just been commissioned. So maybe this should be a factor that they can consider, because education, especially, and this is what we'll discuss later on, right? You need to invest in education today. We are seeing some disastrous results. It's only going to get worse unless we invest.
Yeah.
So could you incentivize states that invest in education where HDI is higher? They have more money. You're creating a better future for the citizens of that state. Rather than taking money away from that state, giving it to another state that's not been performing well.
Yeah, don't give freebies. So now here's the point. Okay, say states that are doing well don't get that tax money. But how, when they divert it to a state that's not doing well, say like BR, like you said, for every rupee contributed, they get seven times the money. How should they use that money? It shouldn't be a freebie. There should be something pegged to them, right?
Yeah, so freebie, let us discuss this. Right? Now, how do you, what is a freebie? Now, will you call the government's responsibility to the society a freebie? or what is given in excess. Right? So if you look at the central scheme, let's take the PM Kisan Samman Yojana, right, where every farmer is getting about 6,000 rupees per acre. That's money given, doled out to the farmers. Maybe that was done to keep up the promise of increasing the farmers' income, doubling the farmers' income, right? Otherwise, it's very difficult to meet that number. That is basically free money, you know, going to the farmer. The objective, of course, is they will use it for other purposes. Now, take the state of Karnataka. You have the state government, which has a lot of schemes, one of them being the Anna Bhagya, right, which is the food subsidy. Yes. Central government also has a food subsidy. You know, it is, again, shocking to me that close to, I think, 50 to 60%, close to 60% of India depends on food subsidy. It's a shocking number. Now, do you call that a freebie or a necessity? I feel it is a necessity.
It is a necessity.
Now, where do you draw the line? As far as food is concerned, education is concerned, they are all necessities. But putting additional income in the hands of people when they may not need it, giving them services that which they may not need,
is dangerous.
It is dangerous. Now,
the farmers part, I agree. Yeah. The below poverty line argument, I agree. People who need food, that is an intervention or a subvention even in many cases.
Correct.
I agree with you. So that they can track, measure, but it cannot be a freebie like they give to youth.
Yeah, that is a problem. Yes. See, if you're giving X amount of money to unemployed youth, now what is the incentive for the system to skill them? Make sure that they can be employed someday.
Absolutely.
Right? They and contradict where will the money come from?
They contradict themselves by saying, we'll give you 10,000 every month and plus we'll reskill you.
Yeah,
it's a contradiction, because if I get paid 10,000, I will say, okay, I've got some land and some income, maybe. And why should I even go reskill myself?
Yeah, so that money should have been put to use to skill them, maybe to improve our infrastructure, teachers, maybe better institutions. I don't know where the money is going to come. See, then these pamphlets that you refer to, right? Everybody is speaking about benefits that will go to the citizen. Not many people are speaking about how it will be funded.
How will it come? Yes, correct.
Where is that money going to come from?
India, the fiscal deficit has gone higher. We are borrowing heavily.
See, many countries borrow. Many countries have a very high fiscal deficit. The advantage India has is that we don't depend on external funding. It's internal debt, which is manageable. But the question is, it's still debt, right? It still puts a lot of pressure on the system. Now, while you can go ahead and make these promises, where is the money going to come from?
It'll come from the middle classes, right?
But no, even if it's middle, you can't tax them to death.
We're going to talk about that, because the Indian middle classes really don't earn that much.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. And that is a stark reminder.
Correct.
A lot of reports say that Indians, there are more than 400 million Indians who earn 30 lakhs per annum. But that is not so.
Yeah.
That is not true,
not
right?
Not true. There are some.
It's skewed.
Different reports giving different.
So we
data.
Have the right numbers. About 400 million Indians earn only 1,65,000 per year.
It's a crazy number.
It's a crazy number. Only that much, and therefore you are right. The middle classes could have been shrunk. Maybe that 50 million will be taxed more.
And how much can you tax them?
Yeah, because they will stop contributing.
And they are also your voter base, right? No government, irrespective of the party, will tax the voter base to an extent where they start protesting.
So it's an interesting point. You're saying that spend money, but spend money that is transparent, that brings people into the formal workforce, or at least gives them a chance to contribute to the economy, rather than giving them a freebie where they don't do anything.
You are free to spend money the way you want, provided it helps you build a better society. Right? You are either investing for the future or consuming.
Okay.
Today, freebies are more about consumption.
Yes.
Again, there, some are necessities. Food is a necessity, right? During COVID, you had to release food grains.
That I agree.
That's a necessity. But now, beyond the necessity, if you keep putting money into consumption versus investments for the future, we are creating a disaster for ourselves.
No, I agree. I buy that. So, in this segment, basically, we are talking about the tussle between center and states for the tax money and how they put that tax money to use. You'll have to understand that beyond the narratives of politics, money should be put to good use, number one. And states that already have a good income distribution, they don't need that money because their people are doing well. And maybe we are subsidizing states that are really low in income to get to the formal economy faster. And that is where the politics comes in, right, in both ways. One is we say that we are doing very well and why don't we get our money? Why should that person, that state which is not doing very well, why should they get the money? But they need it because we're talking about the country as a whole and the center has to steer that. But between that is where
much?
The politics is and how much.
The question is how much.
Correct.
Second thing is the constitution gives the state certain rights. One of it is how they want to spend money. Right now, you can't have the central government sabotaging that right by collecting money through ways that are not to be distributed. For example, cess and surcharge ultimately goes to the center. Center, of course, releases schemes.
And then the tax money, only 40% comes to us.
41% is the cap. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it is with the center. You also have cess and surcharge. They will come in the form of central schemes.
You know, it's strange, right? India has always been about its mothers. Most of the sons and daughters give their mothers the money and they become the central purse to control the house. I mean, just jokes apart, that's how it runs also.
Yeah, I hope that changes.
I hope that changes in a way, right? And therefore, I think this tussle won't end.
It will not
end. It will not end until there are leaders who understand economics and finance, transparency, and that takes a long time.
It will take time.
Okay.
And which is why it's more important to invest in the future.
Okay. Right. So, absolutely. And that's where... Don't give freebies. Invest in reducing the income gap by training people to go work.
Correct.
Giving them a chance to become better and don't pay them to sit at home.
Correct.
That's all. And this is for youth. Yeah. And for the people who are older,
is it a necessity? Right?
Yes.
It becomes a necessity because beyond a point, you cannot expect them to be working. For example, Singapore.
Yes.
You are expected to work till you die.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, do you want such a state? That's not ideal. Could you give them pensions? I'm all for pensions, right? But should you give money into the hands of youth when they are graduates?
In the prime of their life, yes.
No. Shouldn't they be going and searching for jobs? But the question is, are there jobs?
Absolutely. Right? I would rather give free meals and give them training.
Training, yes. But the other question is jobs, right? Which we'll come to later on.
Yes.
If there are no jobs being created, then this becomes a necessity.
Okay.
Because you can't have people on the street.
Okay, I want to go into the second segment. By the way, this entire presentation, we'll try to put in the end of the show or try to fit in the presentation, the gaps where you can understand the data. Okay, now moving into wealth classes in India. A certain report came out a month ago and said that, you know, there will be 715 million Indians by 2030 earning between 5 to 30 lakhs.
Mm.
Huge distribution.
Mm.
Would that be accurate, number one? I want to start there quickly.
I am not too sure because I'm getting different numbers from
because
different
sources. You looked at various sources.
Correct.
And you find there is a huge gap between everything.
I'd really like for this to be true, right? I'd have more and more Indians earning more money, right? And falling within the 5 to 30 lakh bracket. But you also have other reports where the numbers are not this optimistic. Now, would this translate into a reality? I hope. But even if you look at this data, there are a couple of other interesting points, right? If you look at what is happening is a redistribution between the 1.25 to 30 lakh. So you're breaking that class into two subsets, up to 5 lakhs and 5 lakh to 30 lakh. And there's a movement happening within this group. Beyond this, if you see people are earning beyond 30 lakh, and that number is increasing sharply. So if you see the projections, it will increase by 3x. Every 10 years. It is a sharp jump, right?
Which I would agree with you. India has changed over the last 10 years. We are dressing differently. My cameraman and producer, he dresses very differently. And I'm sure 10 years ago, none of us dressed up like that. Even me, I wear Star Wars t-shirts for podcasts. That's true, right?
Yeah.
India has changed. And you are very patriotic, by the way. You've remained the old way. But it is true. A lot of Indians are consuming a lot. Correct. But the 30 lakhs bracket per year, how much is it today according to you? Told me 5 years ago that only 1 million Indians earn more than 30 lakhs.
Not even 30. I'm saying if you're earning more than a lakh a year, a month, that is 12 lakh per year.
Yes.
You're in the top 10% of India, right? So it is that stark. So if you're looking at the top 10% of India, right, and by just earning a lakh, if you look at the data distribution, maybe we'll get to that. Another slide maybe that you'd need to put, right? So if you see that income distribution, we are looking at close to 461 million Indians who are earning only 70,000 per year. You're looking at 369 million Indians who are earning only 1.65 lakh per year. If you add up these two, it is close to 800 million. And their income is less than 1.65 lakh per year. It is a crazy number, right? And if you're earning a lakh a month, like I said, you're in the top 10. It is that hard, at least for the large majority of our population, to even reach a lakh a month.
Right? Okay, let me give them some numbers. People earning, okay, let's take ceiling fans. Let's take these items, right? Ceiling fans, people earning 1 lakh 25,000 per year.
Yeah, 90%
of them. 90% of them own ceiling fans.
Yes.
Okay, the same bunch, only 34% of them own two-wheelers. right? The same bunch, only, but it's interesting, 55% of them own TVs.
Correct.
Even TVs are, TVs and phones will be mainstream now. They are everyone's consuming content. Refrigerator, only 21%, and that's a huge segment, right? And car, don't even ask, it's 1% or below. Air conditioning, it's 2%, interestingly. But I'm saying, India has stark numbers, man. Yeah. Right? So the, and then if you look at the middle classes, right? I mean, people, let's say, I'm going to bunch that whole 5 lakh to 30 lakh as a middle class. And that's where everybody is betting on, because they're the ones who own ceiling fans. They are 70% of them own two-wheelers.
And ultimately, they are your consumers.
Yeah, and that's the reason everyone's coming into India, because that's a huge class. Would it be 100 million, say?
Easily,
right?
Much more, right?
12 lakhs.
No, you're looking at a much...
Indians earning 12 lakhs would be much higher?
Should be,
yes. Sure?
Yes. So you're looking at, even if you look at the data point that we refer to now, right? You're looking at close to 9 crore, right? So you're looking at about 92 million.
92 million Indians. That's great, man.
Yeah, earning at least...
That's like a population of 5, 6 countries.
So, and that is what is attracting a lot of capital. Mm-hmm. You know, at least that is the hope that India will become a massive consumer market. It already is.
Okay. How many people will be added to the new middle class? I mean, you were saying that this will increase, right?
It will. So the expectation is at least that it will grow by 65% upward movement. And there are two movements that we're looking at, right? One is from lower middle to upper middle. You'd see a significant jump there, close to 60-65%.
True.
But the middle class to rich, you'd see a 10% jump. But that number itself is so big. You know, the movement from middle class to rich, even a 10% move. So it's a push, right? It's an upward migration. And that itself will take the number of rich, you know, by 3x every 10 years, right? Because of our population, you're going to see some huge numbers being moved up. Oh, between all these numbers, what is also important is poverty, right? That's one point we need to touch.
How many people are still in BPL today?
It is less than, I think, 3-4%. If you're looking at real poverty, right, it's a small, small number. And a huge percentage of them have moved out. And that is something that is good last 10 years, last 15
years. Hence India's consumption story.
Yes, and that's why you're looking at this upward shift, right? You're looking at the population moving from poor to lower middle, upper middle and rich. Right, and that's something good that we have done. We have certainly done something good.
Okay. Pawan, when I sit with you, there's so much data. And I think people listening to this podcast also would be worried now, saying, how do we access this data? We are going to put it in the BCL India website. Yeah. It'll also be on theupstreamlife.com's website. There you can access it. You can open the PDF first, I would recommend, and then compare everything that we speak and then agree and disagree and agree to disagree also. We'll be happy if you agree to disagree. We are setting the context for the elections and where has India come in 10 years. It's a story of, you know, the GST working, lots of tax being collected, but some states who have paid a lot more in taxes want their money back, but the center is giving it to states that need it. And rightly so, we're a union, we have to share it like brothers and sisters, but in between is the politics, I understand it. The numbers are staggering, sometimes difficult to understand, but I would recommend it because Pawan and team have really worked hard to put it together. They've also given you various sources, so you can look at those sources too. Nothing is concocted, by the way.
Yeah,
we are not politicians. We are setting the context for you.
We are only cynical.
Yes, we are only cynical and we try to be positive. We are business people also.
Yeah.
Okay. Every investor is coming to India for consumption. It's a consumption story. They say, okay, Indians are going to consume, like we said, 92 million middle class today. People earning between 12 lakhs plus every year. They are the top 10% of the country's spending bracket. And that's what they're investing in. And it's going to grow. So let's look at some numbers of household consumption expenditure. How would you read it? I think it has increased. Savings have decreased. Okay. And the gap between urban and rural has also dropped. Am I correct in saying that?
More or less, yes.
Okay, you want to talk about this, please?
So the household consumption expenditure survey was released recently. And there's some very interesting numbers. If you see 2022-23, and you compare it with 10 years back, right? Each of these points. So one thing that's clear is that we are spending more, both rural India as well as urban India. It is good. It's typical of any growing country. You're consuming more. So if you see the money that rural India is spending, it's almost 2x of what it used to spend the last 10 years. So every month on an average, rural India is spending close to 3,700 rupees. Urban India is spending close to 6,500 rupees. Of course, this is the 95% mm-hmm. of the group. They balance 5%. If you see urban India, they are spending close to 25,000 rupees per month.
Mm-hmm.
Rural India would be spending close to 7,500 rupees a month, right?
Okay.
So this is expenditure which is bracketed into two heads, mm-hmm. food, non-food. We'll discuss them separately. What is interesting is that the gap between urban spending and rural spending is narrowing, which is good, right? Which means that rural India is catching up. I mean, they have just as much access
and aspiration
as urban India.
Which means a lot of the D2C brands can, we were just talking about positioning, right. And you know, they can bring international quality shoes locally,
but
made in India, that's a story that can happen.
So from a business point of view, it makes a lot of sense, which means rural India is willing to spend now. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a huge opportunity. The second thing is, again, southern states are spending 25% more than northern states.
It's interesting, right? I always thought we, idli consuming, dosa consuming people would not spend a lot more. But it's interesting to see. That means because there's more wealth in the south.
More wealth, exactly.
So most of the tech companies are here.
Tech companies, and maybe historically too, you have got ports, right?
Mm.
So maybe you were the first to get globalized.
Absolutely. Also,
right?
Which is true, actually.
Yeah, on both sides, right? So there is a historical reason to it. You would know this better than me.
Yes.
Right?
So it's Chennai that started everything. Chennai, Bombay.
And Kerala.
And then Bombay is the Deccan, but you know, it's the central India, but still.
So, yeah, you have a history, right? So you would have a lot of wealth in the south.
Yes.
And naturally, you would spend.
Absolutely. I agree with you. So if you think that a South Indian does not spend, believe me, think twice, we are spending a lot more. Okay. Let's see how Indians spend their money on food, right? There's a 10% drop in food in overall MPCE. You want to explain that?
So this is, again, very interesting and also typical of a growing country where your preference moves towards non-food expenses, right? So the food budget has dropped. So it used to be 59-60% of rural India's budget. It is now 46. If you look at urban, it used to be 48. It is 39.
Okay.
So sharp drop in both cases. But again, within the food expenditure, if you see cereals, they have dropped sharply. If you see rural India used to spend close to 22%, it's now 4.8. But 22 was on a base of 60. 4 is on a base of 46.
It's so dark, man.
I don't know what
to make. I think people are not consuming their cereals and vegetables, their spinach.
Possibly.
You know, that's what, you know, actually they say to live healthy, have good spinach and vegetables, but even vegetables have dropped. I look at the numbers, you've highlighted it in the presentation, you'll see Pawan highlighting these. Beverages have gone up, which means people are going to be unhealthy, right? That's even in rural and in urban. Urban, it's 10.64.
Yes, and 10.64 on a base of 40, which is 25%, which means you're spending more money on processed food and beverages. As compared to, you know, in 2000, if you see it is 6, but 6 is on a base of 46. Right? So as far as percentages are concerned, it occupies a much larger percentage of the spending, both rural as well as Indian, as well as urban.
It's interesting. Even our protein consumption hasn't grown by that much.
Yeah, you have
which
milk.
Which is really
milk
crazy.
Products, yeah.
Milk products, yes.
Yeah, even that, they have, I mean, meat.
That's plattered. Although that's the same.
Egg, fish, meat, it's plattered.
Yes.
Right? So we don't know what these numbers, next 10 years.
It's interesting. That means we will consume more, again, going to mostly IPL and these, you know, soccer leagues or whatever. But we have to produce the talent to go to these leagues.
We'll come to that.
We have to come to that in a
bit. Much darker number.
It's an education.
Let's look at education.
Non-food. Is dropped.
Yeah, that is sad.
And that is very sad. In a land of Saraswati, which is what Indians used to pride themselves on, that every Indian, regardless of their religion, would pride themselves on education.
So if you see these numbers, it's dropped from 8 to 6%. Now it would mean two things, right? One, we are not, and this is despite the fact that the cost of education has increased.
Yes.
Right? Naturally, just considering inflation in education, this percentage should have gone up in the household budget. It's dropped. Two things are possible. One, we were spending less on education. The second possibility is also that right to education is yielding results. Right? That you're now getting education at a much cheaper cost deeper into India. That is a possibility. You can't write that off.
Okay.
Similarly with cereals as well, it is possible that the right to food is yielding results, right? You don't have to spend enough money because you're getting that from the government.
It's interesting. So we have to, within this data point, see that the government also spends on the midday meal schemes.
Correct.
Right? Those schemes are around. So
we'll have to go deeper into the data and see compared to year 2000 and now, what is the impact of the government's intervention? If they are yielding results, which means that individuals have more money in their hand to spend.
Hmm.
So they would be spending on conveyance. You see the sharp increase in conveyance?
I see that. Conveyance, but they've spent less on studies.
Yeah, but is it...
But it could be in government schools. They possibly may be sending... They may still be going to... That means the share of private schools in rural areas is small.
Maybe.
Yes.
We don't know. We'll have to go deeper into the data.
But there's been an increase in durable goods.
Traveling a lot. Indians are spending more on durable goods. It's a sharp increase.
And there's a enormous spend on entertainment, which is interesting, which means smartphone entertainment.
Yeah.
I hope it's not those... You know, those gaming apps.
I don't.
You know, I seriously hope that, you know, the gambling apps that we all talk about anyway. It's interesting, though.
Yes.
This is the reason, at least from a context of the Indian middle class and the, you know, and we're going to add more into the middle class soon by the next 10 years. You know, it's probably double. And that's where everybody thinks that India is going to
end up spending more, so it's a massive market.
And again, to spend so much, they should be working.
Correct.
It's such a contradiction because we were talking about HDI, where some states really need to reskill their people. And the North is younger than the South.
So
demographically.
Yes, you know, you need income to spend.
Hmm.
Maybe we'll have to get into demographic-wise spending.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that data is available. This is from the Ministry of Statistics.
Okay.
They have released one part of the report.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that the follow-up parts are far more detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can give an age-wise spend, that will be fantastic.
Okay. Now, let's go into savings.
Yeah.
An interesting aspect. Many years ago, 2007-8, when I used to write about the insurance sector, they would say that India would save 33% of its income, you know, as savings. It's saved. And they're not putting it in any financial asset, but it's saved in a bank account or something. But what has changed since?
So,
how is the new India saving?
India is saving more money in financial assets.
Mm-hmm.
So, we see that increase very clearly. So, if you see the amount of wealth that India owns in financial assets, it's close to 10%.
Okay.
But what we have also seen over the last, 5 years, is that the gross saving rates is dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, within the gross saving rate is a combination of corporate and household saving rate. But if you look at household saving rate alone, you would see again there is a drop. There's been a sharp drop post-COVID.
Hmm.
Now, one of the arguments is that it is possible that, see, when you look at the household saving rate, you're looking at net financial assets. You, of course, have physical assets too. If you look at the net financial asset piece, that has dropped from 11% to 5%. It's a sharp drop. Now, that is possible if the liabilities increase, right? So, net financial asset is asset minus liability.
Mm-hmm.
If liability goes up sharply, your net financial assets will drop.
Agreed.
Now, what are Indians doing with an increased net financial liability? It is possible they're taking housing loans and investing in physical assets. It is possible they're taking personal loans and traveling, right? So, these questions will need to be answered.
And
this
is just traveling a lot more.
Yes.
Yes, so the savings rates have also been dropped from 33% to what, 25%?
It's dropped, and this is typical of a growing economy, right? A more ambitious economy, right? I'm willing to spend more.
Okay, now let's talk about wealth and income inequality.
Interesting.
You call it the rise of the billionaire Raj. You refer to the people who titled that.
Yes.
It's a book called Income and Wealth Inequality in India, 1922 to 23.
Yes.
It has a famous writer, Thomas Piketty, in it. You know, some of them would call him, you know, a lot of the capitalists don't like him, but that's okay. But there are other people like Nitin Kumar Bharti and Lucas Chancel who's written this report. It's called the Income and Wealth Inequality in India report. And that's what you refer to. So what do you want to talk about income inequality here? If, for example, you say if you earn rupees 1 lakh a month, you are in the top 10% of India's earners. You mentioned that. You know, bottom 50% earns rupees 200 per day. Top 0.001% earn rupees 13 lakhs
per day.
Yeah. That's probably 1 million people, 100,000 people,
no,
I think.
It is much 10,000?
Yeah. 10,000 people, correct.
Yes.
10,000 people earn 13 lakhs. Who are those 10,000 people? Please come and do a podcast with me. Please sponsor me. You know, I would love to really make you feel happy. But okay, jokes apart. Top two Asia's richest are Indians.
This is very interesting.
Go on. Top two Asia's richest
if you
are Indians.
Okay. Top three richest Asians. Mm-hmm. Two are Indians.
Okay.
The third is a Chinese.
Okay.
But China's GDP is five times of India.
That's interesting. And they have only...
But they have the richest is third.
Hmm.
And India has the two top richest, despite being 20% of China's GDP.
Yeah.
Right? So it is an indication of the concentration of wealth.
Hmm.
Right? Now, is that a problem unique to India? No.
Hmm.
Other countries, and the wealth inequality is even worse. You have something called the Gini coefficient.
Yes,
that measures,
you talk about
inequality. That gives you an indicator. And there's a world map too. Right?
Okay.
In the PDF.
According to you, the Gini coefficient of India is
0.33. Yeah.
It is more equal than US, you say. It's Correct. More equal than China, but less equal than Germany and France. Correct. In what way?
So if you look at the Gini coefficient, India is 0.33. If you look at Germany and France, it is 0.31, 0.32. And basically, Gini coefficient is between 0 to 1. Right? If it is 0, then it is perfectly equal. If it is 1, it is perfectly unequal. So the closer you are to 0, which means you're in a more equitable society. Right? So India is definitely more equal compared to China. China is 0.37. US is close to 0.3738. So we are more equal because maybe US and China have a lot more wealthy people and a lot more destitutes. Right.
The income divide there is massive, a lot. Right? So the gap is massive in those countries. Great. So it's true, for those of you complaining that we see many Indians in the flights, it's true, unfortunately. 1% of Indians take 45% of all flights. 2.6% of Indians invest in mutual funds. 6.5% of users are responsible for 44% of UPI transactions. That means it's an urban phenomenon.
It is an urban phenomenon.
But I see UPI across, even across rural regions.
But the question is the volume and the quantum, correct? So if you look at, again, disparity, you're looking at how it is if you're looking at 1% of Indians using 45% of the flight, these are staggering numbers because of our population, right? We have a massive population. So 99% of Indians either may not travel in a flight or are contributing to the remaining 55%.
Yeah, I got it.
Given the size of our population, these are massive numbers, right?
Yeah.
Of course, like I said, this is not unique to India. Other countries have it worse, right? Wealth inequality will be there. Income inequality will be there. There's very little that you can do unless there's an intervention from a tax perspective.
If you look at what you've said earlier, that only the poverty is 3 to 4%. Real poor people are only 3 to 4%. That I'm thinking when I look at India from the 80s to now, we have really done very well.
We have done well, yes.
So there's no point in complaining by all the socialists and communists out there that the capitalists are eating up the country and all that. Yes, I care about the environment. We have to touch on the environment. What do you think?
We will come to that. There's a climate change piece.
Yes.
And that's another...
So let's conclude this wealth inequality thing quickly.
Correct. So wealth, we have discussed.
Yes.
Income, we have discussed. If you look at wealth, again, huge difference. If you see 87% of India's wealth is locked up in immovable property, 10 in financial assets. Mostly that will grow with time. But what is interesting is that 1% of India owns 40% of the national wealth.
1% of Indians?
Indians.
Own?
40% of the total wealth that is available, right? Yeah. So that is how big the gap is. And the last...
And define national wealth quickly for
that. So basically assets, value of assets that you own. So
they if own I add land, up all the land, the gold, the financial cap, everything, yes.
Yeah, correct. So if you add up all of that, 40% of that is in the hands of 1% of India.
Would it be fair to say that we're living in their charity at this point of time?
Maybe.
Maybe? Okay, maybe. Okay, great. Yeah. So, but again, India is still aspiring. We are going to grow.
Yes.
92 million can become 200 million. A lot of people will say that, no, Indians are, there are 350 million middle class today because they have TVs, they have internet. But you're defining it by money. If you have money, that's what defines everything.
Correct.
So today it's only 92 million that are between that earn more than 12 lakhs a year, perhaps.
Yeah, it should increase.
And it should increase with time. So, okay, significant difference between data points. You looked at the World Inequality Lab.
Correct.
And the price
report,
And the price report. The price report goes on to say that by 2021,
So if you look at 2021 and if you look at the 22-23, there shouldn't be a much, there shouldn't be a large difference in these 2 years. But if you see the definition of middle class and aspirers, what the price report refers to and what the World Inequality Lab refers to, I am not able to wrap my head around these numbers because the gap is huge.
Got it.
Maybe some of your viewers would be able to point us in the right direction. But if you see some other reports too, SBI Research has a report. There are a lot of differences in data points, right? World Inequality Report explains how they have arrived at these numbers. It's an interesting read. And they've looked at various data points, right? So I'll share links to that as well.
Yes,
right?
Okay.
So that, you know...
I think so. We share as much detail to the people watching in because they're the ones who are going to vote in a week.
Yes.
So great. Now, challenges to India's growth story. We've covered taxes. We've covered India's wealth. A lot of people growing, you know, all claps to them. And we will add more people in the middle class even better. But now, challenges to the India growth story is my favorite subject. Are we going to do 10% growth in GDP?
10 may be a stretch. We are expecting somewhere close to 7, slightly more than 7, which is also very good, right? We are the fastest growing economy in the world. If you look at the last quarter, we have grown at close to 8. 8.4 is what some estimates say. But again, we have to go deeper into these numbers, right? If you look at agriculture, agriculture shrunk. If you look at manufacturing, it's doing well. If you look at services, you're doing well. Agriculture shrunk because of unseasonal rainfall and in some places deficit. Again, that is linked to our climate change. We'll be linking these two. But the growth has primarily been led by manufacturing. And it could also be because of the government's PLI incentives, right? Production-linked incentives. So maybe they are yielding fruit. But in the next 2 years, at least, the expectation we should be growing close to 7%.
And I really hope it rains in the south or north or wherever in the east and west in India, because this year has been terribly odd. We're getting into the weather in a bit, the weather report, not the band, but definitely the details on how the weather is going to affect our our income and whatever that happens in the future in this country. Right, unemployment. We were always close to 8 to 9%. That's been what, we were 11, I think, at some stage. We're now at 8.
We've done well, but at least the last year, 2023, we've seen a steady rise. You know, it's gone up to 8. It used to be closer to 7. A small increase, but we've done very well from where we were during COVID times. But that's not the point. The point is something far more darker, right, which is the graduates. Fresh graduates aged less than 25 years, 45% of them are unemployed.
Interesting.
So graduates who've just come out of college are just not getting jobs.
Yeah, so they may be doing informal jobs, like delivery boys and all that.
Doing, right? So possibly they're in the unorganized sector.
Yeah, and the Congress, I'm saying, forget the party, regardless of the party, Congress or BJP, that's what they say, that they will give freebies there. That's not a good idea.
The question is, of what use is it, right? You should be creating jobs, right? And if graduates are not getting jobs after having spent a lot of time studying, then the question is, where will they spend? So the household expenditure that we spoke about, middle class growing, a market being created, unless they get jobs, unless they have money in their pocket, where's the question of all of this happening?
Do you think they're unemployed because they're not, unemployable because of technological changes?
Yeah, so there are two things, right? Unemployed and unemployable, correct? So if you look at a large majority of the youth or graduates, 60% of them are not employable. Now, the fact is, 45% of them are not even getting jobs. Forget about being employable, right? Now, with the change in technology, with, say, artificial intelligence taking over, it is very clear the direction that it's moving. Every year, you're going to see some significant change.
Okay.
What will happen to these jobs? Because we are heavily reliant on the services industry to absorb talent, right? At least talent, formal sector. If technology is going to take that space over, and you're seeing layoffs, you're seeing layoffs across the world because technology is able to do things better. What happens to these guys, right? If you look at the difference between states again, it's quite an irony that states which have higher unemployment also have higher graduates.
Yeah.
So a state
and the better HDI in many
ways. A state that is investing more in education is getting graduates out is unfortunately also facing a higher unemployment rate. So
is it because those who study go away out of the state?
No, they're there. Of course, they may go away to search for jobs, right? But if you're looking at people who are remaining...
Yeah, and this is interesting. States like Goa, Kerala and Punjab have higher than average unemployment rates.
If you look at UP, it has a lower unemployment rate than Kerala.
That's a... That seems like an irony and contradiction.
Exactly.
To me.
Now, is UP able to absorb its youth in the informal sector? Correct? Well, if you look at southern states, maybe you're creating a lot of engineers. You're creating people who are very good in coding. Now, that could be a massive asset base to us, provided you have jobs.
And this straight away goes into your investment in education.
Yeah.
And I think...
You need to upskill them. You need to divert resources to upskill them. Otherwise, you cannot have... Our median age, India's median age is 27, 28 years, right? You're looking at 50% of India's population, which is below the age of 30. They're not getting jobs.
Yeah, and the NEP or the National Education Policy recommends that 6% of GDP should be allocated.
Yeah, that's
and this stands
education,
at only 3 to 4%. And the proposed higher education budget in financial year 2025 is lower by 18%. It's the same across the world. There's less spent on education, there's more spent on defense and defense-related research.
Correct.
And there's less spent on healthcare. We are not even getting there yet. Yeah. So should be done?
It's very sad. If you see these numbers, if you see the amount of money that the government of India has contributed this year to IITs, which has been celebrated because it's one of the highest.
Correct. It's and most of the IITs don't stay here sometimes.
Yeah, but
the
they are 1.2 billion.
Yeah, government of India allocates 1.2 billion, yes.
Harvard's annual expenditure is $6 billion.
Yeah. Is it because that, is it because of the private nature of their...
Whatever it is. I'm just saying that the amount of money that we should be spending. Say we don't have a lot of money.
Yes.
We covered this in our budget session,
yeah,
right?
The previous one. I'll put a link to that too. Indians don't have
a lot of money
for sure.
Right? As a nation. So we can only spend so much. Now, the question is, if your own arm, say the National Education Policy is saying that spend at least 6%, but you go and drop the investment in education. So you're not going to invest in the youth. And these, your current population is anyway facing an unemployment crisis. You're looking at 85%. There's another number. 85% of unemployed people are below the age of 30. Now you're not even giving them the tools. You're not even investing in the infrastructure. Because if you see the speed with which technology is changing, do you honestly believe that our current infrastructure of colleges, teachers, can teach students how AI works?
No.
And you're anyway cutting that budget. So what is going to happen to graduates? You have, you know, 12, 13 million, you know, people graduating every year. Where do they get jobs?
It's interesting. It is difficult. Combine that now with, it's true. One is taxes being collected and where they're being spent. Second, we talked about income equality. Incomes are growing at some level, but in some level they're just stagnant. It's funny that certain items are growing, certain items of consumption are not growing, like cereals and vegetables.
Okay.
It's dropping. It's interesting. And therefore, it's funny. Somebody told me the other day that Indians are not learning how to cook anymore on their own. That means they're consuming outside a lot more. It's interesting. That means their nutrition levels may be going down. And then you talk about education. Yeah. It's all dreary to me, where the allocation is bad, where a Harvard alone as an institution spends $6 billion, whereas there are about 10 IITs or more.
Yeah, more.
And
more.
You,
but the
and
fact
they get only
is
1.2 billion.
They're not spending enough on education. We see,
on the science
government
also.
That is saying that I'm willing to give freebies and not investing in education.
Yes.
There should be red flags in your mind.
And let's talk about the climate change, which is an ultimate nail in the coffin, or it's going to bury me or burn me, right? And it's a natural heat wave. So let's see. There's heat waves.
Yeah.
There's landslides in the Himalayas. Heat waves, of course, in Rajasthan. You know, the Himalayas, landslides, cloudbursts, melting glaciers, right? And the Gangetic Plain, there's floods. We have seen that. The coastal plains and Ghats, heavy precipitation, cyclones, landslides again. And central peninsula region, forest fires, and there are heat waves and droughts. And in our city, we don't have groundwater. I wrote about this 20 years ago, but then I was a little man. So little man, I mean, we don't matter actually when we write those things. But yes, if you have to dig in Bangalore, you have to go below 1,000 feet or more, and there's no groundwater.
So I want to bring up two, three points. Right?
Yes.
One, of course, the average annual temperature has been increasing.
Mm.
Everybody knows that. There's no debate about climate change. It's stupidity to debate climate change.
Yes.
Second, if you look at, now let us tie climate change to employment.
Mm.
A large percentage of our population works outdoors because you're not getting formal jobs. You're in the informal sector. Either agriculture, construction absorbs you, or you're doing some informal job. Again, you're on the street.
Mm.
Right? And this includes a large population of our youth.
Yeah, that is basically saying significant portion of our population has to work in the heat.
Is exposed, basically, to the heat, right? If climate change, not if, sorry, as the temperatures increase, it is certainly going to impact our workforce far worse than other countries, right? Because you've got a large population that is exposed, you know, to this heat. If they are not able to work at their optimum levels, right? Yeah. Now, the question is, how much longer would they be even able to work?
And the fact is, some funny startup looking at this cannot say that I'll bring robotics into the fields and farms. You know, it's a good business opportunity maybe, but to be honest, it's a bit of a pipe dream in India at this point of time with the farms and the farm holdings.
Some are
that
doing
we have.
It. At least in Sirsi, we have an office in Sirsi, and people are experimenting with drones. It's interesting.
For spraying.
Yeah, the question is what happens
to spraying pesticides, right?
Yeah. Mm. What happens to the laborer, right? And this is the same with any technology. But the fact is, if you look at climate change, climate change is here. It is going to get worse. I think Karnataka is facing a drought, right? One of the worst droughts that it has ever faced. And what that will lead to is erratic food supplies. Erratic food supply will mean higher food inflation. So things will get expensive. Now, let us combine these things together. Climate change, higher food inflation, and unemployment. You don't have money to buy food, which puts a lot of pressure on the government.
And India's food inflation has anyway been
high. It's very high. It's 8%.
8%,
which puts pressure on the government now to give money away or give food away as subsidies. Again, the question is, where will that money come from? It should come from taxes, but nobody's employed. So who's going to earn and pay? companies have to pay.
Yeah.
But companies are paying 5% lower tax than what you and I pay.
Mm.
Right? So if companies are going to get that benefit, yeah, people like us will suffer.
And the government wants to borrow to keep people...
will borrow because it's inevitable.
And to pay people, is it?
There's no... See, you'll ultimately
to pay people to... It's a freebie, right, then?
It's inevitable. You have to borrow because if the tax revenues are not per your expectations, you have to borrow.
Pawan, are you saying now we have to give freebies?
I think you have to define...
Again, need versus necessity.
Yes. If it is a necessity. See, if...
Do it with a necessity.
Because...
But like, youth is not a... Youth is a necessity for training.
Yes.
And invest in the training. Yes. That's a necessity. Not in making a sitting at home.
Not
so maybe the farmers who... But I think farmers will need a lot of help now.
They will need a lot of help, especially because of climate change.
Yes.
So we have to relook at our budgets.
Mm.
So when you say freebie, you know, giving money to a farmer...
Mm.
May not be that bad an idea because if they are the ones on the field and they are facing erratic climate, they will protest or commit suicide, right? What is the option available to a farmer?
Okay, it's so interesting. It's like a science fiction thing, guys. So, you know, states with higher literacy where, you know, now I want to move from the... I know climate change is really bad and we don't have time. So we have to cover so much quickly. Guys, with all this affecting you, you'll have to look at certain points that are certainly very stark and scary. States with higher literacy will have lower fertility. That is a reality. It's scary.
It's worldwide.
It's worldwide. Okay, just like America now, right, in many ways. Right, and or Europe in many of the countries in Europe, same problem, right? Yeah. And, you know,
I'll just
why would
add,
you want to talk about... Yeah, please go on.
I want to add a point there, right?
Yes.
It's a bigger problem in India. So if our population continues to grow the way it is...
We better do something.
And you have a climate change crisis. Yeah. You have an unemployment crisis. Right. If you combine all of this, you cannot sustain that population. Then what happens to these people who are not getting jobs, who don't have money? The other problem to this, I don't know if I have to bring it up, but
please bring it
you
up.
You also have a social media crisis, right? Where people
are
portraying a certain lifestyle. So there's obviously ambition, right? If someone's buying a new car and posting that, why can't I do it? But I don't have a job.
I don't have the means. Neither do I understand how to do it.
I don't even have food to eat because I can't afford food. Right? So what are we staring at? So if the population just keeps increasing this way, it is going to be madness.
Pawan, again, so much. We're running out of time, right? And sometimes we're talking about 16 lakh startups at this point of time.
No,
that's phenomenal.
1.2 lakh
1.2 lakhs registered.
1.2 lakh registered startups, about 16 lakh active companies.
Okay.
The active companies are those who are filing their returns basically with the NCA.
Okay.
So if you look at startups, again, the hope is that they would be the employment generators.
Okay, now 1.2 lakh startups, but 16 lakhs are active companies.
Correct.
That means that's additional to 1.2?
Correct. So these are... So 1.2 is a subset of the 16 lakh, right? Now, startups could also be LLPs, small fraction, but...
But the registrations of startups are going up, right?
Yes. Yes.
Many of them are not yet registered.
They are all registered either as companies or as LLPs, and they apply for recognition from the startup
.gov.
It is a website.
This is interesting. And then I really want to talk about, you know,
you
summarizing.
Have to touch about FDI inflows.
FDI inflows
are
dropped. Huge. No, they dropped to the startup
last
side. I know
years.
54 billion for startups has dropped to 11 billion.
Yeah. Not just startups, but overall, if you see the last 2 years, the FDI inflow has dropped. Maybe it's dropped worldwide because the world is being more cautious. What's happening in Ukraine? What's happening now in the Middle East? Now, that's another angle which we don't even know how it will play out in the future, right? With the Middle East boiling up now.
Yes.
How does it impact India? Because your oil supplies are impacted.
Yeah, Middle East, I mean, the Iran-Israel thing, or
so
Palestine thing.
Yeah, we don't know.
Or the Russia and Ukraine thing.
Correct.
Russia and Ukraine has always been beat for me.
Correct.
Right? And
this is oil.
And oil side, yes.
Right, so that's...
But the good thing is India is only dependent on the oil side.
Which is one of our major costs, if you see. That is what we spend a lot on.
At least the wheat side is our...
It's all self-sufficient. That's not a problem.
Right.
We export, so that's good. But oil will be a problem for us. In addition to that, we are also heavily dependent on coal for our energy resources. Close to 70% of our energy is met by coal. Combine that with climate change now. Because what will happen with climate change is that you're more dependent
on... 60% of our energy comes from coal, no?
70. Yeah. Close to 70 now, right? The goal is to move that to renewable energy. Yeah. But now here's the problem. With erratic climate, you will start consuming more energy, obviously. Yeah. You'll have fans running, ACs running. To make that function, you need to have a lot of coal reserves, which will be burnt now, which again contributes to
climate change.
Right? So,
and temperature increase.
Yeah.
I know, I mean, fascinating podcast. We've all like I said, in 10 years, India has changed. We dress differently. We aspire differently. A lot of people have moved away from poverty. And not lightly. I'm not saying this lightly. India has done really well over the last 25 years, especially the last 10 years. It's youth power. But like he said, the youth needs to be trained, skilled. No freebies to them, please, any government. Taxes are being collected. The center versus state problem is really covered very well. Thank you, Pawan, for that. It's always the case, right? States that are doing well will always ask for more. It's the same in the U.S. too, in the schooling system. The schools that give the best grades ask for the best, ask the government to pay them more. But here you can't do that because there are certain pockets of India that are really very poor. Therefore, the central government is moving money there.
It is natural. And thank you for the opportunity to speak. I may have come across as someone very cynical in this.
You're not cynical. You're being practical. Data doesn't lie.
Yeah.
Youth don't lie in their capacity to do great things. But please don't visit your local bar. Instead, visit visit your local library. If there is a library, digital library, use your smartphone wisely. Yeah. And maybe we're getting old to say that, right? Okay, but we're not old, guys. I'm telling you, go change India. India is rising. But again, ideas are needed. Climate change is real in India. Invest in things that really will, well, go have your cereals and vegetables. Invest in that. Invest in things that make your lives better and lessen the consumption of packaged food because really not good for your gut. We all know that as we have aged again. Again, revealing our age. We're not that old. By the way, enjoy this podcast. Give questions. This entire interview's reports, the beautifully, you know, curated report. We're going to put it up in the BCL website, in the Upstream Life website. We'll try to make a video of the slides also.
Yeah, we'll try.
We'll just release that too.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pawan. Thank you.
Thank you.